Okay, I'm going to have a lot less data here than what Nathan just showed us. So this is more of a talk on modeling and where we sit now. I would argue that the answer to this question is yes, they can be used. The newer models that are out there are quite good, I think, at looking at plant root growth and nutrient uptake. So let me move on. I want to recognize my co-author, Sylvie Bruder from Purdue University. Both of us have worked with potassium uptake modeling earlier in our careers, and we've kind of gotten out of it. But now there's an opportunity to look at it again, so we've gotten back into it a bit. K-fertility problems are on the rise. Let's see. Use the pointer here. Not necessarily that we always see this classic K deficiency, the necrosis and such on these corn leaves, but sometimes it's just very subtle. And if you have a well K fertilized plot, you can see the difference between it and one that doesn't have enough potassium if you go out and look at those two plots. So they are K fertility problems are on the rise. The International Plant Nutrition Institute has pushed more research on potassium nutrition in the last couple of years. It's kind of been off everyone's radar screen because of nitrogen and phosphorus. I think there are a lot of papers here on the phosphorus problems and the nitrogen problems in the Gulf, causing problems in the Gulf of Mexico. So potassium's kind of been off the radar screen, and now it's coming back because of these problems, and they're showing up all over the world with many different crops. One of the issues we have, and this diagram came out of a conference earlier this year. I put the website up there if you want to check it out. This is sort of our own modification of the K cycle, and if you look in the middle where plant available K is, all of these various pools can supply K. So you can see if you're running a soil test, you're trying to capture some of that. One of the problems with that is that there is what we call flux. There's a lot of interchange amongst these, and so while the plant is growing out in the field, the roots are capturing potassium from all of these various pools. And if we don't account for that when we do our soil test, then we don't get very good results. As far as models are concerned, models can be empirical or mechanistic. I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but Nathan just showed us some empirical models. So the regression type models that have values that you calculate, these models I'm talking about today are going to be more mechanistic. So what they do is incorporate mathematical equations that describe the processes involved and soil supply and nutrient uptake by the plant root systems. Now, we can measure some of these things. There are a lot of new techniques out there. I was at a Rhizosphere conference earlier this year as well, and there are a whole lot of fancy techniques out there that we can look at nutrient depletion from the rhizosphere. So there can be some measurements done, but at this point in the game, they're very expensive. Models are our tools, then, that we can use to look at different scenarios without putting out a lot of field trials, not knowing where we're going with those trials. So they're very useful from that standpoint. They can be simple or complex. The earlier versions of the nutrient uptake models, which I'll show you in a minute, were fairly simple, but they did a pretty good job under certain conditions. The newer ones are a little bit more complex, but I think they can help us. All models include assumptions. I have to throw that out there because there are limitations to what they can and cannot do, so you have to be cognizant of that. Some of the early models that came along, Nye and Marriott in 69 developed a model that looked at transport of nutrients in the soil. Clausen and Barber came out with their model in the mid-70s, Nye and Tinker likewise, and Barber and Cushman came out in 81. So these early models really described well soil supply of nutrients and nutrient capture by plant roots. And they seem to work fairly well. There have been a lot of papers published based on modeling efforts. And I have a couple slides here on how these processes were described. So soil supply of nutrients, so roots can grow to the nutrient. Roots can capture nutrients in the transpiration stream, so by convection or what we've called mass flow. And then finally, diffusion is another process to supply nutrients to root surfaces. I've thrown in one of the transport equations here. There we go. So this would be, this part of the equation would account for the convection or mass flow of nutrients to the root surface. This part would account for the diffusion of the nutrients to the root surface. And so this would tell us how the nutrient concentration at the root surface changes with time, if you solve that equation. Then how do plants capture roots then? So you not only have the supply to the root surface, but you have to understand or have some way of mathematically describing root uptake. So the classic way to do this is with the Michaelis-Menten relationship, which I've shown here. So we have net K influx, and these are, a reference here, but these are all taken from the literature. So this is data that's published out there. Solution K down here, so as our concentration of potassium in solution increases, we get an increase in net K influx up to a maximum rate. So each root or root segment will be able to capture K up to a maximum rate. So if we increase solution K concentration by fertilization and say get it way out here, it doesn't really matter to the root if they're already absorbing at a maximum rate. So there is that trade-off between the soil supply and the nutrient uptake. This equation that I've shown right here describes that, so the maximum uptake and also some efflux that may occur down here at very low concentrations. So the roots can actually lose the nutrient to the surrounding soil solution, and that's is accounted for. Quite simply, the models that were out there earlier in the 80s and 90s, or 80s and 70s, I guess, just looked at root growth. So they considered a single root growing through soil. So they didn't account for any root branching or any root proliferation or anything of that nature. We just looked at, just tried to come up with an equation that would describe root growth. If you're looking at early in the season plant growth, you see this part of the line here. So the root growth will reach a maximum rate at about anthesis, so flowering, silking in corn. So this equation that's written here, shown here, shows what we would use if we were looking at young plants, so seedlings, so we could describe root growth. If you combined all of those equations, you could look at nutrient uptake, or in our case, potassium uptake, by the plant root system over a short period of time. There are also equations describing this this linear phase. You could put in linear root growth, or there I've never worked with those, but there were models that had sigmoidal root growth patterns that you could put in as well. But again, they didn't account for the types of roots, so whether it was a tap root or fibrous root system, and so there were problems with that if you tried to take these and look at many different plant species. Later then, the PC-based models came out. So these early models were mainframe versions, and you really have to understand how the models worked in order to use them. And you basically had to go to the person's lab and work with them. You couldn't just work with it on your own. When these newer versions came out, they were PC-based, and so the models proliferated quite a bit after that. So Norbert Claassen came out with his NST model in 1986. Then Barbara Cushman came out with another PC-based version of that model. Oates and Barber published that one in 1987. And then the NST version, a 3.0 version came out. That one included root hairs, so that was an advance to account for uptake by root hairs. And so this SN model, Smethurst, I believe, came out with that one in 2000. We used several years ago, let's see, this was published in 2009, so 2007, 8, I had a student from Norbert Claassen's lab come to my lab, and we were interested in looking at low-K soils and if we could model uptake and perhaps use one of these newer models, because I hadn't worked with the models for many years, so I was interested in using this NST model. And again, this is kind of a schematic of the processes that were involved. There was some thought that root exudation was having some effect on K uptake, but we didn't know how to model that. We didn't have an equation for it, so we had to go with what we had here. And what we found, so we had various crop species here, and I wanted to concentrate on maize today, but we also worked with wheat and sugar beet. But we had a low-K soil that we didn't add any potassium fertilizer to, and then we added 250 milligrams per kilogram of K, and then we grew the plants in pots. So this is a growth chamber study, and we grew these plants, then we measured, we determined the plant and soil parameters that we needed for the model. We measured what was in the plants when we harvested them, and then compared that with what we calculated with the model. And if these values, this is calculated, divided by measured, if these values were all one, then we'd have perfect agreement with our model. But that's not the case. They were closer when we had potassium applied to the soil, but where we didn't, the model often under-predicted or greatly under-predicted what the plants were getting. So there was some thought, well, maybe the plants were capturing potassium that we hadn't measured. We did measure exchangeable and solution K concentrations, and so we guessed at the fact that maybe non-exchangeable K was being released somehow. We thought maybe root exudates were doing that. I do have a lot of data on the various root exudates that came from the roots, and I hope to use that in the future to rerun these models. And what's happened then since that time, since the earlier models, is there were also, I guess, concurrently, other models being developed for root systems. So such as RootMap, this came out of Australia, Art Diggle's lab. SimRoot, that's a popular one that's out of Jonathan Lynch's lab at Penn State. So these other RootMap or root architecture models have been developed concurrently, but they were never used together with some of the soil models. So I haven't done this, a group in Germany combined the root architecture and soil models recently, and so there are a couple of these out here now. R-SWMS, or R-SWIMS as we call it, that was first discussed or published in 2008. The root box model that Andrea Schneff and her group in Jülich, Germany developed, came out in 2010. So what's interesting to me is the early models, when they were developed, they always had the name of the researcher on them. So it was always Barber's model or Clausen and Barber model. Later, when the PC models came out, we had names assigned to them that sort of reflected what the models did. And then as we've advanced that now to this point, the models actually have their own logos that are associated with them. And I would like to give a plug here for the International Soil Modeling Consortium, which is going to form here. There's a website here. You can look at the slides to pick that up. One thing that I was interested in visiting with the group in Germany was that they had published some papers on phosphorus, and possibly we could use the same approach for potassium. This is a slide. This is from Andrea Schneff's publication in 2011, showing a pot experiment where they had modeled root growth in phosphorus amended soil, whether it was a low P soil or a higher P soil. And you can see the roots tend to take advantage here. So this is simulated, looking at the phosphorus effect on the root growth. So they can model that. And also on this side, this is phosphorus depletion. So you can kind of see where the roots were growing here. You can see the phosphorus has been depleted. Where the roots are not growing, the phosphorus is still in the soil. So these are the red levels or higher levels. So I thought that's pretty good. It's actually showing what's going on in that system. Another effort was more recent. This is oilseed rape grown in a rhizotron, so a little box. You can see it's only 10 centimeters wide and about 40 centimeters deep. And they measured the roots, and then they modeled the root growth. And they were interested in root exudates from this oilseed rape. And so the thought was that the younger roots were the roots that exuded or that lost organic acids or some other exudates more so than the older roots. So they modeled the root age. And so this is at 16 days. So you can see the older roots are here and the younger root tips are there. So about 50% of the roots here are younger than a couple of days old. And so they were able to model that. Finally, then, they went back and they had some measurements of citrate exudation by these root systems and then also phosphorus uptake. And so they were able to model the release of citrate and the thought that this citrate would be absorbed by the soil similarly to phosphate. And so then they looked at the phosphate uptake here, and they modeled these two systems. And I think it worked pretty well. It shows where the citrate is and where the phosphorus has been depleted. So this has not been done for potassium. Nothing's been done with potassium with these models. So to me, it's very exciting that I probably have enough data we can start looking at modeling potassium uptake. And that will allow us to look at these different scenarios and what may be happening and help explain what's going on with a lot of soils. There are still quite a few challenges out there. One minute, okay. So there are still quite a few challenges out there, things that these models can't explain. And so I've listed a number of them here. Obviously, we're trying to scale up from the single root, the early single root models, to the whole plant. Our field scales is a little bit difficult. But again, we're moving in that direction. Model verification, again, there are a lot of techniques out there now that we can measure root concentrations of nutrients around roots much more easily. So it helped verify these models. We can then use those models to look at various scenarios as far as potassium availability is concerned. I think at some point we'll get to the stage where we can use the models to understand why a broadcast application of potassium doesn't work as well as a subsurface band application. So, this is extra, so I'll just stop there. Thank you.